Welcome back to the third and not final part of the U.S. Naval History Podcast's South China Sea miniseries. I'm extending this yet again into a four-part series, with part four focusing on some of the notable and infamous South China Sea incidents over the years, including the Hainan Island incident, where a Chinese J-82 interceptor jet crashed into a U.S. Navy EP-3 signals intelligence aircraft, numerous extremely dangerous and very aggressive confrontations initiated by the PLAN and their maritime militias against the United States Navy and other allied navies that were conducting FONOPs in the South China Sea, as well as how under Duterte, the Philippines tried the appease China strategy, which worked out about as well as the historical precedent for appeasement would suggest. This episode focuses a little bit more on the theory of FONOPs and maritime law. I'm going to open this episode with a little bit of an unusual source, CGTV, which is the China Global Television Network, a broadcaster under the control of the Central Propaganda Department of the Chinese Communist Party. This is a short clip that I've cleaned up a little bit for clarity, but they talk about the South China Sea and set the stage for our discussion here and how China sees the issue.
The South China Sea is one of the issues CCTV News covers. And whenever we cover this issue, we receive a wealth of information, questions, and comments on our social media platforms. And it is also one of the topics that international media outlets love to cover. But despite all the coverage, this issue is still shrouded by myths, half-truths, or misunderstanding. And that's why we're here today to raise some of the points that often appear on our social media platforms and look at other points that international media have made over the past few months. And for the second program in our Ask China, South China Sea special series, we're going to be looking at America's military presence in these waters. So, are they world police force, global aggressor, or a bit of both? To answer all these questions and more, I'm delighted to be joined by Mr. Zhao Xiaozhuo. He's director of the Center on China-U.S. Defense Relations at the Academy of Military Science. It's great to have you with us, Mr. Zhao.
Yeah.
So let's begin by talking about America's policy to China. According to the New York Times, some 700 American patrols have already gone through the South China Sea in the past year, talking about freedom of navigation. But at the same time, that China has been saying that they are entering Chinese waters illegally. So what's your understanding about this controversy between, on the one hand, freedom of navigation, and on the other hand, entering Chinese waters illegally?
So first, let's understand what is the
freedom of navigation.
Of navigation operations. The freedom of navigation operations was launched in 1979, just before the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, was signed in 1982. That is not an action under international framework or multiple national framework. It is a unilateral action launched by the United States. It just wanted to challenge excessive maritime claims of the, coast countries. And under this operation, the United States send its troops, send its warships everywhere in the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean, all the places globally.
Does the U.S. also send patrol missions to other parts of the Pacific who have disputed waters?
That's true. You know, the claims by South Korea, by Vietnam, by Indonesia, a lot of countries.
So is this a routine practice, or is the U.S. trying to challenge China's claims in the South China Sea?
It is a routine practice. But what I'd like to highlight here is this. In the South China Sea, the freedom of navigation is a force issue. It is not a real issue. We have not heard any commercial flights or any commercial ships being blocked, being hijacked, or being stopped by any coastal countries, including China. So over the past decades, there is no question of freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. And the United States sent its troops in very close proximity of China's islands and the reefs.
Within the 12 nautical miles.
Within the 12 nautical miles, and under the name of maintenance of the freedom of navigation. I think that is a challenge to China's sovereignty, security, not the freedom of navigation. And also, it is dangerous. So that is why the China is strongly opposed to the freedom of navigation operations.
So as you can hear there, CGTV is spinning the issue in a very disingenuous way. The guest does recognize that the United States conducts freedom of navigation operations on multiple countries, not just against China. But beyond that, he is, what's the word? Lying. Yep, there we go. The guest claims that FONOPs are a, quote, unilateral action launched by the United States, end quote. Well, sort of, in the sense that one country at a time generally conducts them against one other country at a time. But there have been joint actions in the past couple of years, and Australia, Japan, France, Britain, Canada, and a bunch of other countries bordering the South China Sea have all conducted South China Sea FONOPs against each other. And around the world, dozens of countries perform FONOPs collectively against more than 50 coastal nations around the world every single year. The FONOPs are in service of enforcing the common multilateral rules that all countries are supposed to abide by when operating at sea. The news clip goes on with the claim that, you know, quote, we have not heard of any commercial flights or any commercial ships being blocked, being hijacked, being stopped, end quote, which is just a blatant lie, given that China is the one doing the blocking and the harassment. Go back and listen to the second episode on the Maritime Militia for more details. So that's a lie. And the guest goes on to say that, quote, the United States sending its troops very close proximity to China's islands and reefs within the 12 nautical miles and under the name of the maintenance of freedom of navigation, I think that this is a challenge to China's sovereignty, security, and not freedom of navigation, end quote. And so here, again, the guest is playing a ridiculous definitional game. This is precisely the point of FONOPs, since the Chinese claim of 12 nautical miles are generally not valid under UN clause, and thus sovereignty does not extend to them. And this is precisely what the United States is pushing back against. So it's correct what the guest was saying in the sense that if you accept the Chinese illegal claim, but beyond that, again, ridiculous. And so I'm going to cut here to Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi conducting a press conference.
And I want to remind some people that the freedom of navigation doesn't give them a license to do whatever they want. If someone wants to muddy the waters in the South China Sea and to destabilize Asia, China will not agree to it. And I think the overwhelming majority of countries in the region will not allow that to happen.
So close, and yet so far, Mr. Foreign Minister. I think that you are right in that the overwhelming majority of countries in Asia do not want this to happen. And you are correct that there are countries trying to muddy the waters. However, I think that we would have a fundamental disagreement as to the country everybody else is worried about and the country doing the muddying here. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the pushback that the United States Navy is conducting against illegal Chinese maritime claims. So just a quick reminder on what we're talking about here. Freedom of navigation in the South China Sea is about enforcing the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UN clause, which is the international agreement that defines the rights and responsibilities of all nations with respect to their use of the world's oceans. It entered into force in 1994, and most countries of the world, including China, are signatories to it. The overwhelming majority of the U.S. foreign policy community supports the U.S. formally ratifying the UN clause. Both Presidents Bush and Obama pushed aggressively for the ratification, as did Joe Biden when he was a senator. But the United States has not become an actual signatory because some conservative Republicans don't approve of the treaty. Nonetheless, the United States, for all intents and purposes, adheres to the UN clause. And under UN clause, there are, and I'm simplifying a bit here, three basic types of maritime features. One, islands. Two, rocks. Three, low tide elevations. An island is defined as a naturally formed piece of land, okay, surrounded by water, check, which is also above water, okay, and capable of sustaining human habitation or economic activity. And so if you remember back to episode 1, the super small island slash atoll, Ibu Ata, was ruled as not capable of sustaining human habitation or economic activity. And so for the purposes of UN clause, it is not an island. It is a rock. And since Ibu Ata is the biggest, quote, island, unquote, in the Spratly Island chain, that means that the rest of the islands also are not capable of supporting human life and economic activity, and they're not classified as islands either. The second type of feature is a rock, which for the purposes of UN clause is a piece of land surrounded by water, which is above water at both high and low tide. But unlike an island, it is not capable of sustaining human habitation or economic activity. So think all the stuff in the Spratlys. And finally, you have a low tide elevation, which means that the, you know, thing, the rock, the reef, whatever, is only visible at low tide. And at high tide, it is completely underwater. In the South China Sea, it's a very shallow body of water, which has a ton of these low tide formations. So why are these different features important? Why does it matter if you're a rock, if you're an island, if you're a low tide elevation? Well, it comes down to the rights that each type of maritime element grants to the country that owns it, whether that be the rights to a territorial sea, the rights to a contiguous zone, the rights to an exclusive economic zone. And so what are these things? A territorial sea is the area that a country has complete sovereignty over, including the airspace and the seabed. A territorial sea extends out 12 nautical miles from the shoreline. And then after that, you have a contiguous zone, which is 12 more miles. So basically the belt of sea from 12 to 24 nautical miles from your shoreline. And the contiguous zone is not national territory, so to speak, but you do get a few more rights as a country in that area, but not much more than you would in the open ocean. Then finally, you have the exclusive economic zone, which extends 200 miles from the edge of your territorial sea, so 212 miles from the shoreline, more or less, with a few complications that I'm not going to get into. But inside this EEZ, the country has, well, exclusive economic rights to fishing, gas, mining, and every sort of other economic activity in the area. There are some complications with the continental shelf, with straight baselines, et cetera, to various rights. But if you understand the last couple minutes, you are 85% of the way there. We've got our islands, we've got our rocks, we've got our low tide elevations. Each of them give the country controlling them a little bit different maritime zone. With the islands, you get territorial sea, you get a contiguous zone, you get the exclusive economic zone. So that's that 212 miles out from the shoreline. Awesome. With rocks, you get a contiguous zone. So that's that 12 to 24 mile belt, plus you get the territorial sea. So you get out 24 miles, but you do not get that exclusive economic zone. So not all that gas and that fishing, which is really valuable in the South China Sea because there's a lot of gas and such there. And so if you can stake your claim to an island, then you know, it's worth a lot of money. And then finally, you have the low tide elevation features. And with this, you get nothing. Unless it's within 12 nautical miles of land or an island, in which case it could be used as a starting point for territorial sea. And then you can push your EEZ out a little bit. But again, that's sort of the complication that for the most part, you don't need to worry about. So China, though, has used a lot of these low tide formations and rocks as a base to build up a much larger set of artificial islands. And so what rights do these artificial islands that China is building get? Fortunately, UN clause covers that and basically says that you can build up your island and make as much land in the middle of the ocean as you want, make it totally capable of supporting human life and economic development, yada, yada, yada. But the rights accorded to that artificial island depend on what features existed prior to construction. And even if, as in the case with what Taiwan has done with their rock at Ibu Ata, they build a bunch of major desalination plants, they import a bunch of soil so you can grow some stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Fundamentally, prior to all of that, Ibu Ata was just a sandy little atoll and certainly not capable of sustaining human life, as evidenced by the fact that nobody ever lived there. And so it's legally a rock and can't be used to claim an exclusive economic zone. And so say, for example, as China has done, build a bunch of artificial islands on top of low tide features and rocks. These artificial islands are not entitled to the rights of a real island under the eyes of the law. And if you think about it, this rule makes a lot of sense. building an unlimited number of artificial islands to counter the next country's artificial islands just leads to a big, dumb, artificial island-building arms race, with poor, small countries losing out when big, powerful countries build islands right next to your shoreline and then claim all your territorial and economic rights. Oh, wait. Shoot. That's basically what China's been doing, to the detriment of the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, etc., with the bonus of putting a bunch of military gear on these islands that pose an additional degree of military threat and coercion. But nonetheless, legally, under UN clause, these islands are not entitled to an exclusive economic zone or a territorial sea if it was just built on top of a low-tide formation. So inside this territorial sea, right, so that 12 miles, what can a country do? As I said earlier, the territorial sea is the sovereign territory of the state, and you get the exclusive right to make and enforce your own laws without foreign interference. For all intents and purposes, it is no different than the land a country owns, with one exception. Because it is the sea, and ships need to sail on it, in the sea, it is recognized, and it has been recognized for a long time, that all vessels, military, civilian, they all enjoy the right of innocent passage through the territorial sea of other states. And again, this makes a lot of sense because there are many times in which there is no good way to traverse through an archipelago where the 12 nautical mile bubbles of territorial sea interlock and would otherwise force a giant detour, which doesn't make a lot of sense. The thing is, though, that innocent passage has to be, well, innocent, meaning that any ship or vessel can move through it, but that vessel has to move through directly and refrain from activities that are not necessary for continuous and expeditious passage. And a passage is not innocent if, for example, the vessel threatens to use force. So a ship can't sail through there, through another country's territorial sea, and announce on the radio,
"I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to bomb you."
Right? Doesn't work. A military vessel also can't do military exercises, so no practicing with weapons, no gun shoots. You can't spy on other countries. You can't propagandize against other countries. You can't make radio broadcasts.
"Oh, wouldn't you love some nice freedom over here?"
Nope, can't do that. You can't launch or land aircraft or drones, nothing like that. No aircraft carrier operations. You can't smuggle stuff. You can't pollute. You can't fish. You can't conduct surveys. You can't jam other country signals. You can just sail through innocently, get from one side to the other. And so that's why you have a lot of rights inside of your territorial sea, except for the fact that someone can, you know, sail through to get from one side to the other. Beyond the territorial sea, you have that 12 to 24 mile belt I mentioned called the contiguous zone. And there you get a few more rights, basically to enforce laws and some Coast Guard actions, not really important. But beyond that, there's the 200 mile exclusive economic zone. And states don't have a right to limit navigation in an exclusive economic zone. They just get the right to get all the sort of financial benefit from it. So on to excessive maritime claims. What are they? That is when a country asserts rights that are inconsistent with the terms of UN clause, the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. In other words, illegal claims. And there are two main types. The first is claims that are inconsistent with the legal division of the oceans and the airspace. So what that means is a country is claiming more than their 12 miles in some manner by saying, "Our territorial sea actually starts here," when in fact it doesn't legally. And pulling from the 2022 DOD list of FONOPs, the United States did this type of FONOP against China, Iran, Nicaragua, and Somalia in 2022. Somalia is a weird case because for some reason they claim that their territorial sea extends to include all of the water up to 200 miles from its shoreline, which is not the case. And all of these countries, for various reasons, claim more territorial sea than the UN clause allows for, and the U.S. pushed back against them in 2022. Number two, the other common type of UN clause excessive claim, is restrictions on navigation and overflight rights. This type of violation is more common and occurs when a country requires advance notice or has some sort of special condition for an action, which legally, advance notice or special conditions are not required, since innocent passage is a right, not a permission sort of thing. From that same 2022 DOD list, again, this includes actions against Antigua for requiring prior permission for foreign warships to conduct innocent passage through the territorial sea and archipelagic waters, which the Navy did not seek before conducting instant passage through their territorial sea, against China for, quote, requiring prior permission for innocent passage of foreign warships through its territorial sea, end quote, in the South China Sea, which again is not a legal requirement and the United States did not seek. And the list goes on with a bunch of countries requiring, quote unquote, advance notice of some sort. And this is a long list, and the U.S. Navy regularly ignores all these legal demands. And when challenges, responds with a radio message stating that we are conducting instant passage. And through this process, we uphold the right of every ship to do the same. And you can go back and find these lists, 2022, 2021, 2020, going back, you know, many years. And it's just a different sort of rotating cast of countries that we conduct these FON ops against, opportunistically, whenever we're in the area for the most part. These FON ops, or Freedom of Navigation Operations, are the most significant way in which the Navy goes about pushing back against illegal territorial claims in the South China Sea, where China is a flagrant and serial violator of essentially every single principle of maritime law. And so now I'm going to talk about three representative FON ops that the Navy has conducted in the past few years in the South China Sea. It's hard to get detailed records on these FON ops, but some general pictures appear, and I'll fill in the details the best I can for you. But I'll warn you that this involves a little educated guesswork on the exact circumstances of each case. Case number one. It is May 10th, 2016, in the Spratly Islands off of Fiery Cross Reef. The USS William P. Lawrence is pushing back against the excessive maritime claim requirement by China that states provide advance notice and obtain permission prior to innocent passage through the territorial sea. On May 10th, 2016, U.S. Navy destroyer William P. Lawrence conducted a freedom of navigation operation by transiting under innocent passage within 12 nautical miles of Fiery Cross Reef and the Spratly Islands. Fiery Cross Reef is occupied by the Chinese, but it's also claimed by the Philippines, by Taiwan, and by Vietnam. Fiery Cross Reef is about smack dab in the middle of the South China Sea. It was first occupied by mainland China in 1988. Under a charter to build a weather station for the United Nations, and then they just never left. The whole reef has a natural landmass of less than 10,000 square meters, but it's been expanded to more than 3 square kilometers now to include a more than 2-mile-long military airstrip, deepwater port facilities, missile sites, radars, barracks, and, in short, a very large military base. At the time that the Freedom of Navigation operation was conducted, it was unclear if Fiery Cross Reef was legally considered a rock or an island, but the Ibu Ata International ruling in July of 2016 that I referenced earlier confirmed the obvious that the natural condition of the reef was not precisely habitable, and Fiery Cross Reef, along with all the rest of the Spratly Islands, has been recognized by every country except for China as a rock. Because Fiery Cross Reef is legally entitled to a territorial sea, again, because it's a rock, but irrespective of whether it's a rock or an island, innocent passage is still allowed, and so the United States transited within 12 nautical miles of Fiery Cross Reef under the provisions of innocent passage. And this freedom of navigation operation was designed to challenge the policies of China, Taiwan, and Vietnam, all of which require permission or notification to transit under innocent passage through their territorial sea, all of them claim it. Accordingly, the USS William P. Lawrence did not provide notification or request permission in advance transiting under innocent passage. And as for who we would have notified if we were in the business of notifying people, which again, we're not, it wouldn't necessarily be China or Vietnam or the Philippines, because the United States does not take a position on which country has sovereignty over each feature of the Spratly Islands. And the operation was not designed to challenge any specific country's claims of sovereignty over land features. But given that the active controller of the reef is China, the pushback was effectively the United States telling China that we do not recognize your right to require prior notification. The second case is an example of, you know, quote, FON ops by air. And these are not technically FON ops in the sense that a true FON ops is conducted by a ship, but these serve much the same purpose, and I'm going to intersperse a few different recordings in this section, which are all illustrative of the same type of operation that the Navy conducts to push back against the excessive claims that China exerts against air traffic as well as against sea traffic. This first clip is public thanks to a BBC news crew aboard a U.S. Navy P-8 Poseidon sometime in mid-2018. The P-8 is flying above Subi Reef, which is another reef-turned military base in the middle of the South China Sea, which is occupied by China and claimed by Taiwan, the Philippines, and Vietnam as well. And you can hear the challenge from the Chinese ground station, who use the Chinese designated name of the reef, which is Jubi Reef.
Leave immediately and keep her off. U.S. military aircraft, Papa 8 Alpha. This is Chinese Yunfu Reef. China has sovereignty of the national islands, including Yunfu Reef and its adjacent waters. Leave immediately and keep her off so as to avoid any misstanding.
For the most part, these interactions are routine, although sometimes they do get a bit more tense. And I'm going to talk a lot more about those tense ones and the more dangerous end of the behavior in the next episode, the final episode of the South China Sea miniseries. And the United States does get a little bit more respect in general than the Philippine military planes do when they conduct joint patrols with the United States. And you can hear this as the Chinese ground station takes a bit of a sharper tone to the Philippine airplane here.
Philippine military aircraft, I'm warning you again. Leave immediately, or you will bear full responsibility for all the consequences.
And here is Lieutenant Matt Johnson, the pilot from the P-8 in the BBC documentary, explaining the back and forth between the Chinese ground station and his aircraft.
It's a routine occurrence for us on these flights. It happens throughout the flight where they come over and then we just go back with our standard response, and it really has no effect on any operations or anything we do.
And then here we have Lieutenant Lauren Collin, the P-8's Naval Flight Officer, NFO, explaining why the Navy does these flights.
It's making sure that we maintain the rights that we have as a military aircraft to fly in international airspace, maintain our presence in the area, and show that we're not worried about the buildup that's happening and that we are going to continue to stay down here in the South China Sea.
The next few minutes I'm going to play are a separate but more complete back and forth between the U.S. Navy P-8 and Chinese ground station. You can hear in this clip that the Chinese are not always quite so professional. If you listen closely, you can hear the Chinese ground station meow at the P-8 and later flood the airwaves with what I would describe as annoying UFO noises. And it goes on like this for another couple minutes, so feel free to skip forward a little.
2062 on 1215. GoCat 2986, this is GoCat 2062 on 1215. Target 2986 on guard. Target 2986, target 2062 on guard.
For a military airplane, you are approaching my military security here. Please go away quickly in order to run government. Is it me?
This is calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself. I am a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
Delta 866 on standby 121.5. Delta 866.
This is the Chinese Navy. This is the Chinese Navy. This is the Chinese Sky.
Delta 166.
A foreign military airplane, you are approaching my military security air. Please go away quickly in order to run government.
Station calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself.
Okay, in order to run government, read me.
Station calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself.
This is the Chinese Navy. This is the Chinese Navy. This is the Chinese Terror Sky. Please go away quickly in order to run judgment.
I am a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
There's the meow. I'll play it back again real quick in case you missed it.
I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
Aircraft. This is Chinese Navy. You are approaching our military alert zone. Leave immediately in order to avoid misjudgment.
I am a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law. I am a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
Military aircraft, attention. This is Chinese Navy. You are approaching our military zone. Please stay away from this area and leave immediately. Your action is unfriendly and dangerous. Your actions are dangerous.
Station calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself. I'm a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
Niva 6086, contact Manila.
Border of Wainaina, and we are...
Foreign military airplane, you are operating by military security out. Please go away quickly in order to avoid long judgment. 外国军机, 你接近我军事警戒区, 为避免误判, 请立即远离.
Station calling U.S. military aircraft, please identify yourself. I am a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
This is Chinese Navy. Please go away quickly in order to avoid long judgment.
Bohemia, I'm 777.
Bravo, Kilo Tequila, requesting fall level 430.
American military airplane. You are operating by military security out. Please go away quickly in order to avoid long judgment.
Station calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself.
This is Chinese Navy. Please go away quickly in order to avoid long judgment.
I'm a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I'm operating with due regard as required under international law.
Go, go!
1275, good evening, Zulu 449.
Nation 2608, established on the island.
American military airplane. You are operating by military security out. Please go away quickly in order to avoid long judgment.
station calling U.S. military aircraft. Please identify yourself.
This is Chinese Navy. You are approaching my military security out. Please go away quickly in order to follow on judgment.
I'm a United States military aircraft conducting lawful military activities outside national airspace. I am operating with due regard as required under international law.
Sometimes, though, the Chinese take a more aggressive response to those legal flights to the South China Sea. Here's a clip from NBC News in 2019.
The U.S. military says the American plane was in international airspace conducting routine patrols. Look how close the Chinese plane gets, placing itself about 10 feet away and then drifting forward toward the nose of the American plane, forcing it to descend to avoid a crash.
What message are the Chinese trying to send us?
The Chinese are demonstrating that they view the Western Pacific as a Chinese lake. They'll continue to expand, and they don't want any interference from anybody else.
For several years, U.S. officials have been warning of increasingly dangerous behavior by China's pilots, saying a major incident is only a matter of time. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin raised concerns about it just last month with China's defense minister.
The United States will continue to fly, to sail, and operate wherever international law allows.
Again, these are not the types of FONOPs that directly enforce maritime claims, which are done by a surface ship, but the concept is broadly the same, and these happen much more regularly. It's the drumbeat intelligence collection and routine rights assertions that make a big difference in the long run. The third and final FONOP that I'm going to talk about happened in 2017 around Mischief Reef. I'm going to summarize a finding from the Congressional Research Office about this particular FONOP, which is a bit different than the first and second ones in some important ways.
Regarding the FON operation conducted on May 24, 2017 near Mischief Reef, it may prove the most significant yet for the United States because it challenges not only China's apparent claim of a territorial sea around Mischief Reef, but in doing so, questions China's sovereignty over the land feature altogether. The Pentagon said the U.S. warship did a simple military exercise while close to the artificial island, executing a man overboard rescue drill. Such drills may not be conducted in innocent passage.
Because innocent passage has to be, well, innocent, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, no drills, however innocent they may seem, can be legally done in another country's territorial sea.
And therefore indicate that Dewey exercised high seas freedoms near Mischief Reef. The U.S. exercise of high seas freedoms around Mischief Reef broadly repudiates China's claims of sovereignty over the feature and its surrounding waters. In the case of the Dewey, the Pentagon made clear that it did not accept a territorial sea around Mischief Reef by China or any other state. The United States has shoehorned a rejection of China's sovereignty over Mischief Reef into a routine FON operation. Mischief Reef is not entitled to a territorial sea for several reasons. First, the feature is not under the sovereignty of any state. Mid-ocean low-tide elevations are incapable of appropriation, so China's vast port and airfield complex on the feature are without legal effect. The feature lies 135 nautical miles from Palawan Island, and therefore is part of the Philippine continental shelf. The Philippines enjoys sovereign rights and jurisdiction over the feature, including all its living and non-living resources. Second, even if Mischief Reef were a naturally formed island, it still would not be entitled to a territorial sea until such time as title to the feature was determined. Title may be negotiated, arbitrated, or adjudicated through litigation, but mere assertion of a claim by China is insufficient to generate lawful title. If suddenly a new state steps forward to claim the feature, Britain perhaps, based on colonial presence, would it be entitled to the presumption of a territorial sea? Even Antarctica, an entire continent, does not automatically generate a territorial sea. A territorial sea is a function of state sovereignty, and until sovereignty is lawfully obtained, no territorial sea inures. Third, no state, including China, has established baselines around Mischief Reef in accordance with Article 3 of UNCLOS. A territorial sea is measured from baselines. Without baselines, there can be no territorial sea. What is the policy rationale for this construction? Baselines place the international community on notice that the coastal state has a reasonable and lawful departure from which to measure the breadth of the territorial sea. Unlike the USS Lawson operation, which appeared to be a challenge to some theoretical or phantom territorial sea, the Dewey Transit properly reflects the high seas nature of the waters immediately surrounding Mischief Reef as high seas. As a feature on the Philippine continental shelf, Mischief Reef is not only incapable of ever generating a territorial sea, but also devoid of national airspace.
All of this is referencing the "It's More Complicated Than My Super Simple Summary" at the beginning of the episode of the UN Class Explainer, so let's keep listening.
Aircraft of all nations may freely overfly Mischief Reef, just as warships and commercial ships may transit as close to the shoreline as is safe and practical. The Dewey Transit makes good on President Obama's declaration in 2016 that the Annex 7 Tribunal for the Philippines and China issued a final and binding decision. The United States will include the Dewey Transit in its annual list of FON operations for fiscal year 2017, which will be released in the fourth quarter or early next year. How will the Pentagon account for the operation? What was challenged? The Dewey challenged China's claim of indisputable sovereignty to Mischief Reef as one of the features in the South China Sea, and China's claim of adjacent waters surrounding it. This transit cuts through the diplomatic dissembling that obfuscates the legal seascape and is the most tangible expression of the U.S. view that the arbitration ruling is final and binding. Regarding this same FOM operation, two other observers stated the following. The Dewey's action evidently challenged China's right to control maritime zones adjacent to the reef, which was declared by the South China Sea arbitration to be nothing more than a low tide elevation on the Philippine continental shelf. The operation was hailed as a long-awaited freedom of navigation operation, FONOP, and a challenge to Beijing's moves in the South China Sea, a sign that the United States will not accept China's contested claims and militarization of the Spratlys, and a statement that Washington will not remain passive as Beijing seeks to expand its maritime reach. Others went further and welcomed this more muscular U.S. response to China's assertiveness around the Spratly Islands to challenge China's apparent claim of a territorial sea around Mischief Reef, as well as China's sovereignty over the land feature itself.
So there we have it. Three different types of FONOP, three different types of claims to push back against. One, that the territorial sea requires permission to enter. Another, and not a technical FONOP, I know, that the airspace belongs to China. And the third, disputing that China is entitled to a territorial sea around Mischief Reef at all. These are just a smattering of the FONOPs that the Navy has done in the past decade against excessive Chinese maritime claims. The other big part of the push that the United States has conducted over the past decade is strengthening our partners in the region, most specifically the Philippines and Vietnam, to push back themselves more forcefully against Chinese claims and to prevent further Chinese encroachment and reef seizing. These are important issues, and I think they have merited a now four-part series, and I hope that you've enjoyed it and found it somewhat informative thus far. And if you haven't, well, part four will be more action-packed and less legally focused than this one, and focus again on those direct confrontations between China and other major powers in the South China Sea. And then after that, I'm going to return to history. I know, a miracle. I have some cool ideas for what we're going to do next. But as always, please send me your feedback, thoughts, show ideas, etc. I would love to hear it. usnavalhistorypodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to share, rate, and subscribe. And until next time, fair winds and following seas.